text 11. Devan bhavayatanena te deva bhavayantuvaha parasparam bhavayanta shreya parama vapsyatha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. The demigods are empowered administrators of material affairs. The supply of air, light, water, and all other benedictions for maintaining the body and soul of every living entity is entrusted to demigods, who are innumerable assistants in different parts of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their pleasures and displeasures are dependent on the performance of yajnas by human beings. Some of the yajnas are meant to satisfy particular demigods, but even in so doing, Lord Vishnu is worshipped in all yajnas as the chief beneficiary. It is also stated in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna himself is the beneficiary of all kinds of yajnas. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam. Therefore, ultimate satisfaction of yajnapati is the chief purpose of all yajnas. When these yajnas are perfectly performed, naturally the demigods in charge of different departments of supply are pleased, and there is no scarcity in supply of natural products. Performance of yajnas has many side benefits, ultimately leading to liberation from material bondage. By performance of yajnas, all activities are purified, as it is stated in the Vedas. By performance of yajnas, one eatables become sanctified. By eating sanctified foods, one very existence becomes purified. By purification of existence, finer tissues in the memory become sanctified. And when memory is sanctified, one can think of path of liberation, and all these combined together lead to Krishna consciousness, the great necessity of present day society. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunnilitam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha. So at the outset, would like to welcome everyone to our Sunday feast program. Today, in the august presence of His Holiness Kavichandra Maharaj, I am endeavoring to speak on the subject of complete cooperation amongst the Supreme Personality of Godhead on one hand, devotees and demigods on the other. Now, the demigods, as we read in the purport just now, are empowered administrators of material affairs and are in charge of various necessities of life. Now, by being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifices, the demigods supply all the necessities of life, such as air, light, water, and all other benedictions. In other words, demigods are authorized supplying agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, the demigods must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed sacrifices. But we have to understand, and as Srila Prabhupada makes it clear, all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Srila Prabhupada comments elsewhere that all the necessities of life that the human society requires are supplied by the demigod agents of the Lord. Actually, if we really analyze, we find that no human being can manufacture any of the natural products that are there. All the eatables, all grains, fruits, vegetables, milk, sugar, etc., and all other needs cannot be manufactured by human society. You cannot take a test tube and produce rice unless you have some rice grains already that you can culture or you can plant and you can produce rice. So without the Supreme Lord, there cannot be profuse sunlight, there cannot be moonlight, there cannot be rainfall, there cannot be breeze, without which no one can live. Therefore, it is very, very important to realize that our life is completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. Even our so-called manufacturing enterprises require so many raw materials, like you require metals like iron, sulfur, mercury, then manganese, and so many materials. But all these are supplied by agents of the Lord, by the demigods. The question may arise in our mind, why does Krishna provide all these things? Well, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful answer to this question. Prabhupada says, to keep ourselves fit and happy for the purpose of self-realization leading to the ultimate goal of life. This is the purpose why the Lord provides everything for our pleasure and for our benefit. And what is the ultimate goal of life? Srimad Bhagavatam makes it clear. Savai pumsa paro dharma yato bhakti adokshaje. So the supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain the loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord Sri Krishna. So the scientists may take pride that we are manufacturing this, we are manufacturing that. But eventually, unless they realize that all these things are coming from Krishna, their life is not really going to be successful. Prabhupada makes a statement that if we forget the purpose of human life and simply take supplies from the agents of the Lord, that is the demigods, and for our own sense gratification, and become more and more entangled in material existence, which is actually not the purpose of creation, then we are thieves. We are thieves. So a society of thieves, Prabhupada says, can never achieve anything concrete in life. They have no aim in life. There is this famous story of an industrialist who came to meet Srila Prabhupada when he was in Mayapur. He came there to meet him and he introduced himself as a person who is manufacturing glass. Then Srila Prabhupada asked him a question. He said that you are a thief. He said, how am I a thief? He said, from what is your raw material for manufacture of glass? He said that it is sand. Sand is silica, and from silica one manufactures glass. So the manufacturer did not manufacture sand. He just utilized a process and made glass. So then he said, that manufacturer said, the industrialist said, that Prabhupada, I also give some donations. Then Prabhupada said, you are a small time thief, you are not a big thief. In other words, he wanted the industrialist to realize that everything comes from Krishna. Ishwaraha Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of everything. Everything that we get is from the Supreme Lord. So this devotee is fully conscious that he himself is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Mamayo Vamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. He is equally conscious that even the demigods, they are also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And it is by mutual cooperation, as we read in this verse, that there is prosperity for the society. It is not that we disrespect demigods or we have contempt for demigods. We respect them, but we do not worship them. We worship only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So this mutual cooperation, which we don't see, it is unseen, but it is there. It is very much existent. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, Annat bhavati bhutani parjanyat anna sambhavaha yajnyat bhavati parjanyo yajnyah karma samudbhavaha. It's a very beautiful cycle. Scientists sometimes try to talk about various types of cycles, isn't it? This cycle and that cycle. But this is a cycle in which all living entities, it is reported, they subsist on food grains. Food grains are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna. And yajna is born of prescribed duties. So this has been existing for millions and millions of years. And this state of affairs will continue to exist. So it is not something which is going to vanish. And this is actually an ideal example of cooperation. In today's material world, people talk of cooperation. We talk of cooperative societies, we talk of cooperative banks, so many things. But eventually the real cooperation is for benefit of the entire humanity. To create prosperity for all, which would help human beings to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Samsiddhir Haritoshanam. So if conditions are created in which every living being can take shelter of Krishna, that is a very ideal society. That is what we have to recognize. So yajnyat bhavati parjanyo. It's a very important statement. this is a fundamental process, a cycle which is going on. Now, sometimes scientists have attempted to create rain. In the past, there has been a project sanctioned by government, lakhs and lakhs of rupees sanctioned for the project, in which they tried to seed the clouds, artificially create rain. They tried that experiment. And after spending lakhs and lakhs of rupees seeding the clouds with some silver salts, they were able to produce few milliliters of rain. Now, compare this to the clouds which are created by Krishna. Water evaporates from the seas and other reservoirs, goes out into the skies and creates clouds, which apparently don't seem to be very heavy, but pour so much rain that crops can grow and we human beings can subsist and we human beings can get something to eat and take shelter of Krishna. So this is what one has to be aware of, and devotees have to be aware of that. Now one may ask this question, that so difficult to perform yajnas in this age of Kali. It is indeed very difficult for two reasons. One is that we don't know how to perform yajna. We don't know, we don't have knowledge about it, nor do we have ingredients, the right ingredients to perform yajna. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Udara Purushottam, he has given us a very easy method of performance of yajna. And what is that method? Sankirtan yajna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada states that this Sankirtan yajna can be performed by anyone in this world. Anyone, right from a child to an old man like me, anyone can perform this Sankirtan yajna by accepting Krishna consciousness in full. That is all that is required to perform this yajna. And by performance of this yajna, so yajna are necessarily to be performed, but which yajna to perform is our choice. And in this age of Kali Yuga, Sankirtan yajna is the recommended process. So devotees of the Lord are always performing yajna. When all of you congregated here for the Sunday feast, you performed Sankirtan yajna, isn't it? Shravana Kirtana Smarana Vandana Pada Sevana Dasyare Pujana Sakijana Atma Nivedana. All these processes actually are nothing short of yajnas. They are all yajnas. And by performing that, we are on the path of devotional service, ultimately leading us to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada therefore says that devotees of the Lord must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna in full Krishna consciousness. This is what ISKCON is all about, teaching people to chant the holy names of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness. This is the goal of ISKCON, and this is what everyone is endeavoring. Srila Prabhupada himself, all over the world, he preached. His disciples are preaching. His Holiness Kavichandra Maharaj, he goes to all corners of the world to spread Krishna consciousness and preach the chanting of the holy names. So this is something we have to realize. And when this is realized, we have this parasparam bhavayanta shreya param avapsyata, which is what the verse is all about. Then there will be prosperity. Prosperity will reign everywhere. So we are so fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has given us such an easy process for performance of yajna. And we have to take advantage of this process which has been given unto us. So Srila Narada Muni, Devarshi Narada Muni, tells the prachetas, he tells them that yatha taroha moola nishechanena trupyanti tat skanda bhuja upashakha prana uparacha yatha indriyana tatha eva sarva arhanam achyuta ijya. Pouring water energizes the entire tree, everything, leaves, branches, twigs, everything. Supplying food to the stomach energizes the entire body, all the senses and everything is activated. Similarly, by simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Achyuta Ijya, through devotional service, automatically satisfies all the demigods who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an essential teaching which we have to understand. So we have to perform yajna to please the demigod. This is what the verse says. But how to do it? That easy process has been given to us. And Srimad Bhagavatam very authoritatively tells us that by simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead and rendering service unto him, all the demigods are automatically pleased. just as by watering the tree, root of the tree, the entire tree, you know, gets nourishment. So this is the fundamental understanding. So this particular fact that by worshipping Krishna, the demigods are all pleased, is it true? One may ask a question. Are there any examples you can cite to illustrate this point? And for that, the answer is emphatic yes. There are so many examples. Srimad Bhagavatam is replete with so many examples where we see this invisible cooperation. We don't see it easily, but which is tangible, invisible cooperation between the devotees and the demigods on one side and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I would like to share with you a few of the examples, with permission of His Holiness Kavichandra Maharaj, a few examples from Srimad Bhagavatam. So the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it talks about Jadabharat. Now I'll be narrating this in a very condensed form because many chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam are occupied by Bharat Maharaj and so many things. It will be in a nutshell. We don't have so much time. So Bharat Maharaj was on the threshold of Bhava Bhakti and he became attached to a deer, as everybody knows. And at the end of his life, somehow or the other, he was not able to think of Krishna at all. He thought of a deer. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram. One who gives up his body, thinking of the Supreme Lord, he goes back home, back to Godhead. However, Bharat Maharaj, though he had reached a very high stage of Bhava Bhakti, because he became attracted to a deer, he got the form of a deer. So he ended up in a deer's body, but by the grace of the Lord, he remembered his past. So in a deer's body, he was very Krishna conscious. We don't remember what happened even in our own life, what to speak of past life, but the deer remembered the mistake that it had committed in previous life. And this time was Krishna conscious and gave up the body in an atmosphere where there was nothing else but spirituality, where there was nothing else but chanting of the holy names. And therefore this time he attained, the next birth was that of Jadabharat. Now Jadabharat at birth was a fully realized soul. He remembered his past, he remembered his life as Bharat Maharaj, he remembered his life as, you know, a deer. And he did not want to commit the mistakes which he had committed earlier. Once bitten, twice shy. That is a saying in English. Didn't want to commit the same mistake again and again. So this time he decided that he would not talk at all. Anyone who saw him, he had a very nice body. He grew up into a very robust young man. A very nice body, very attractive body. But he was all the time, he was not wearing good dress. He wouldn't talk. He wouldn't talk a single word. So right from birth, he was branded as a dullard, a good for nothing person. So nobody gave any respect to him. He received only contempt and humiliation from his brothers. His sisters-in-law fed him, you know, burnt out rice. He was starved, but not a word, not a murmur from Jadabharat. He kept quiet. He did not want to talk and get embroiled in material contamination of this world. And therefore, though he was endowed with a robust body, because he was endowed with a robust body, his brothers actually used him or abused him and got hard labor out of him. He had to work like a laborer. And in fact, the Bhagavatam describes that Jadabharat was used as a scarecrow to watch the crops in the field. Scarecrow is nothing but they dress up some wooden sticks with, you know, shirt and pant and all that, and stuff cotton in it, and he's standing in the field. So the crows think that some man is watching, and they don't, crows and animals don't come and destroy the crops. That is the idea of a scarecrow. So the brothers made him into a scarecrow. What a humiliating experience for one who is self-realized at birth. But Jadabharat was beyond any material designations, and he accepted this humiliation as mercy of Supreme. This was the purity, this was the exalted nature of Jadabharat. So at this time, what happened was, I'll describe it in very brief. There was a dacoit leader from a Shudra family, and he wanted to get a son, and he believed in all kinds of concocted rituals, and he wanted to worship Bhadrakali by offering human sacrifice. So this dacoit leader and the dacoit, they caught hold of whom they regarded as a useless person. They caught hold of him, but somehow or the other he escaped. Now the servants of this dacoit leader, they came, and they came to the field and they saw a man standing there in the field, scarecrow. They said, here is the right substitute for the man who has escaped. They caught hold of him, they tied him with ropes, and they brought him to the place where this human sacrifice was to be offered. Said, this is the right person. So they were happy that they had carried out, you know, the responsibility given by their leader. So they brought him there, and after bringing him there, they actually bathed him. This was possibly the first bath which Jagat Bharat had. They put on new clothes for him. They put ornaments for him. They put garlands for him. So he was looking like a demigod, dazzling with brilliance. He had Brahma Tejas already, but he was looking more beautiful and handsome because of the dress which he had never worn in his life. And after that, the chief priest said that, now you know I am going to make an offering. So he took out a sharp sword, very sharp sword, and he consecrated it with different mantras. And just as he was about to chop off the head, goddess Bhadrakali, whose vigraha was there, right, standing there, she couldn't take it. She said, here is a pure devotee of my Lord who is being, you know, victimized like this. So she burst out of the vigraha form and came out with such dazzling brilliance, and she just took the sword which was intended for killing Jada Bharat, and with that sword she chopped off the heads of all the dacoits, and she drank the blood of those dacoits. So it's not that Jada Bharat sent an appeal to Bhadrakali, mother, you know, please save me. No SOS, nothing. But she herself came. So this is an example of cooperation, unseen cooperation, unsolicited cooperation, in fact, between a demigoddess like Bhadrakali and a devotee of the Supreme Lord, all happening under the agency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what we have to understand and what to appreciate. Then we have the very famous example of Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a devotee of the Lord, born in a family of demons. At the age of 5, he dared to preach Krishna consciousness to Hiranyakashipu, a ferocious demon whose even movement of eyebrows sent shivers in even demigods. Even the demigods were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. But Prahlad was fearless. He had taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, completely fearless. So he preached to him. He said that, Father, you take to the process of Krishna consciousness. It's a very long story. There are so many chapters in the 7th canto. But what is important is that when Hiranyakashipu heard Prahlad preach to him, he became enraged. He became so angry that he threw off his son from his lap. Just a few moments earlier, he was caressing his son, trying to love him, you know, smelling the scent of his hair and all that. But next moment, he just threw him. So this is what happened. This is demoniac mentality. So as soon as, you know, one is, you know, disgruntled, you go become violent. And he became violent. And in his uncontrolled anger, he held this fireball Prahlad, responsible for the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. So this is what happens when one becomes angry. Anger leads to generally sammoha. Sammoha leads to smriti. Smriti vibrama, and smriti vibrama leads to buddhinasha. He lost his intelligence totally. And then what did he do? He actually ordered violent methods of murder of his son. So many methods were tried. Crushing him under the feet of an elephant, putting him in pit of poisonous serpents, throwing him from huge mountains, trying to burn him, trying to drown him, trying to freeze him. All possible methods of torture he tried on Prahlad Maharaj. Hitler could have learnt a few lessons from Hiranyakashipu. But nevertheless, he did all these things, even tried magic spells, conjuring tricks. But no matter what, Hiranyakashipu and his assistants tried, Prahlad Maharaj stayed put. Why? Because he had taken shelter of the Supreme Lord. He was completely fearless. So the demigod of fire did not burn him. The demigod of waters did not drown him. So on and so forth. So this is a wonderful example also. Then in the fourth canto, we read about the pastimes of Prachetas, the sons of Prachini Bhari. It's a very beautiful example. Prachini Bhari was actually an emperor, a king, and he wanted his sons, who are called as Prachetas, to get married and beget children. That was his order. Now I'm talking about Satyayuga. This is happening in Satyayuga. So when the Prachetas received order that they should get married, the first thing they did thought of was doing austerities for 10,000 years. Now, in current times, if you ask your son to get married, he will look for registrar of marriages or whatever, start looking for a marriage hall or whatever. But no, here the Prachetas thought of performing austerities for 10,000 years. Once again, it's a long story. I'll condense it. And they just went along. As they were traveling, they came to a very beautiful lake, wonderful lake, there was a very serene atmosphere, very spiritual atmosphere around the lake. There were birds chirping, there were swans, there were, you know, beautiful lotus flowers emanating from the lake. So it was a wonderful atmosphere. And as they were just looking on, charmed, enchanted by the atmosphere, they suddenly started hearing some sounds. And once again, there is a big, long description of it, but out emerged from those waters none other than Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva had a complexion of molten gold, except for the, you know, blue line around his neck. It's called Neelakanta or Kalakanta. He emerged along with his associates and he met with his Prachetas. He met with them, and after having met with them, he said that, "I'm so pleased with you, all of you." Why? Why was he pleased? He said that all of you are wonderfully cooperating with one another, and all of you have only one agenda. And what is that agenda? To perform austerities for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Vaishnavanam yatha shambho. Lord Shiva is happy when people try to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Not unhappy. So Shiva became very, very happy to meet these Prachetas. And when the Prachetas saw Lord Shiva emerging out of that lake with his associates, they offered their dandavats to him. And Lord Shiva was so happy with these Prachetas that he told them that, "Look here, I am so very pleased that all of you are united in wanting to worship and in wanting to perform austerities for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So, and therefore, he said, then he started chanting prayers in glorification of the Supreme Lord, Lord Shiva. There are many, many prayers which he chanted, very beautiful prayers in glorification of the Supreme Lord. And after he chanted all the prayers, he taught the prayers to Prachetas, and he told them that, "You perform your austerities, fine, but you please also chant these prayers which I am teaching you." The Prachetas were so grateful. Said, "Here is Lord Shiva, Mahadev, come here without our even approaching him. He has come on his own, and he's giving us this opportunity of chanting the prayers which has taught us, and thereby trying to please the Supreme Lord." And thereafter, they spent 10,000 years in water, in that very lake, which is very, very powerful spiritual environment. And after that, the Supreme Lord himself appeared. He was also extremely pleased with them because they were cooperating with one another. So this cooperation is one of the most important facets in a devotee's life. In our devotional service, in our devotee's life, we meet so many people. And everyone has different natures, everyone has different propensities. pinde pinde matir bhinna. Everybody has different approaches, but it is very, very essential to understand that all are trying to take shelter of Krishna, and everybody, you know, we should cooperate with one another. So this is the fundamental principle. So this is how we find Lord Shiva approaching and also finally duly appreciated by the Supreme Lord himself. Then in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a very glorious example of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, again, a condensed version of the story. Dhruva Maharaj became, he was a pure devotee of the Lord. As all of you know, he set out to win a kingdom which was greater than that of his great-grandfather. Grandfather is Swayambhuva Manu, his father is Lord Brahma. He wanted a kingdom greater than that. He set out with that, but he met, by the grace of Narad Muni, he started, you know, his austerities, and at the end of the austerities, he met the Supreme Lord, and he was completely transformed into a pure devotee. He then said, you know, I was looking out for, you know, all kinds of, you know, broken glass, but now you have given me this rare diamond of bhakti. That is Dhruva Maharaj. Later on, the Lord, recognizing that initially Dhruva Maharaj had set out for getting a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, he gave him Dhruva Loka. And he also told him that you rule now. You rule as a king for several years. And he did rule very beautifully, gloriously. It so turned out that his younger brother, Uttama, he was killed by a yaksha. And when he was killed, I'm talking about several years after he ruled for thousands of years, then this Uttama was killed by a yaksha. And Dhruva Maharaj, he could not take it. He had that kshatriya spirit. That is what was reflected when he was, you know, thrown off the lap of his father, Dhanapada. But this kshatriya spirit, he said that, you know, I'm not going to take it. He went, and there was a fierce battle between the yakshas and Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj was an expert charioteer and an expert bowman, and he destroyed single-handedly as many as 1,30,000 yakshas. Very fierce battle which went on and on and on and on for a very, very long time. The yakshas tried all kinds of conjuring tricks to bewilder Dhruva, but at the end of it all, Dhruva Maharaj came out unscathed out of that. But he went on a rampage. He was still killing the yakshas. At that time, without his soliciting, Swayambhuva Manu, he appeared there. He told Dhruva Maharaj, he said that your brother was killed and enough is enough. You have shown your affection for your younger brother by, you know, killing so many yakshas. But now it is time, if a devotee of the Lord like you, such a standing, doesn't do these violent acts. So please stop now. So Dhruva Maharaj, that enmity, the feeling of enmity, which is very difficult to control. If you have a feeling of enmity towards anyone, it is so difficult to overcome that feeling. But Dhruva Maharaj overcame that feeling of enmity towards the yakshas. And after overcoming that feeling of enmity towards the yakshas, he ceased, no killing. There was peace all round. And then one more demigod made his appearance. That was Kubera. Kubera, who is the god of wealth, he came there. He came there and he said to this Dhruva Maharaj, I'm very pleased that on the advice of Swayambhuva Manu, you have given up your enmity. This is a very wonderful development. This is what we expected of a pure devotee like you, and you have done it. And he did it. So I'm very happy with you. Now you can ask any boon. You can ask a boon from me. And what did Dhruva Maharaj ask? He said that I would like to be a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was the boon that Dhruva Maharaj asked. So thus we find that demigods come into the lives of devotees unasked for, unsolicited. Then one more example is that of Prithu Maharaj. Now, it's a very famous example again. Now, we know that Indra is known as Shata Kratu. That is, he had performed 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas, which is what entitled him to get the post of Indra. Now, Indra, Brahma, these are all posts, administrators, as we discussed in the beginning. They are the administrators. They hold certain positions. So, Prithu Maharaj was performing Ashwamedha Yajnas after Ashwamedha Yajnas, and he performed 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas. Now, we know Indra. He is also a devotee, Karma Mishrita devotee. He couldn't take it. So, up to the time that Prithu Maharaj performed 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas, it was all right, it was tolerable. But then, Indra became fearful that Prithu Maharaj may exceed that number, go to 100 and overtake him. It's like, you know, current day cricketers vying for records. So many centuries and so many things and all that. It's of no significance. It makes no difference. We are going to die anyway. If I score 40 centuries or 39 or 38, whatever, it makes no difference. I'm going to die. Yata se dhruva mrityu. Nevertheless, here Indra was really petrified that Prithu Maharaj is going to overtake. So what did he do? So what he did was that he tried to interfere in the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna. He came down and he stole the sacrificial horse itself and he went up. Now, he was being chased by Prithu Maharaj's son, who was as heroic and valiant as Prithu Maharaj himself. He went after him and Indra literally had to flee. And the son was chasing after him. But as he was chasing after him, he saw that Indra, he was dressed in saffron. He had worn the clothes of a sannyasi. So Prithu Maharaj's son thought, oh no, sannyasi, no, must respect sannyasi. Saffron clothes. So he came down. Now, it is said that this is where, you know, that deterioration in respect for sannyasi, you know, began at that point in time. Now, when he came down, Atri Muni, he told the son of Prithu Maharaj, he said, nothing doing. This Indra, you know, has exceeded his limits. He deserves to be killed. You go up, go back. Run after him. So again, Prithu Maharaj's son went after Indra. Indra became petrified. He was fearful. Then he gave the sacrificial horse. He said, let it go. So, and then he also threw off his saffron. He was in his original, you know, dress as Indra. And Prithu Maharaj's son brought back the sacrificial horse, and Prithu Maharaj wanted to commence his 100th Ashwamedha Yajna. Now, as we are performing the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna, Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma appeared and he told him that you are a pure devotee of the Lord. Don't run after records, you know, in performing Ashwamedha Yajna. So, let Indra be. You are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Indra is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. He is what he is. You are what you are. So there should be some degree of cooperation between two of you. You desist from doing the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna. He also convinced the Brahmanas that you desist from what you are doing. And this way, peace was ensured. And later on, the Supreme Lord himself appeared. Vishnu appeared there. He appeared there along with all his associates and he glorified Prithu Maharaj. He said that he admired him for not going for the 100th, you know, Ashwamedha Yajna. It takes great courage to withdraw at the point of winning. You are about to do what you can win, but due to a transcendental reasoning or transcendental logic, you give up what you are about to do and then you withdraw. So that was Prithu Maharaj. So Lord Vishnu admired him. He said that you have done wonderfully well. So thus we find that the demigod approach, demigods, you know, come into the lives of devotees in some way or the other and they cooperate with the devotees and make his life smooth, or see that he doesn't swerve from the right path of devotion service. So we have just returned from Yatra of Vrindavan. We were in Vrindavan and Govardhan, And I cannot desist from giving one last example, and then I would conclude and request His Holiness to speak now. So the last example that I want to speak about is that of Srila Sanatan Goswami, who is our Acharya, you know, Sambandha Acharya. So Sanatan Goswami, when he was residing at Chakleshwar Mahadev, he was wanting to write, you know, Vaishnava literature, transcendental literature. In fact, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they are the people who have provided us spiritual nourishment by creating so much wonderful Vaishnava literature. So he was writing, and as he was writing, he was bothered by mosquitoes. Mosquitoes, giant-sized mosquitoes were coming and biting him. And Sanatan Goswami could not focus on what he wanted to do. Then he thought, and he did not thinking of using a mosquito repellent or, you know, tortoise, nothing like that, huh? Or even, you know, hitting or whatever, nothing, or beating, nothing like that. He said that, okay, he's also a living entity, mosquitoes are living entity, I am a living entity, they want to feed on me, but, you know, I want to do my service of writing, so let me vacate the place. So he wanted to vacate the place. Now this was not pleasing to whom? It was not pleasing to Lord Shiva, Chakleshwar Mahadev. He did not want Sanatan Goswami to vacate the place. He wanted the association of Sanatan Goswami. So what did he do? He called a demigod in charge of insects. He called a demigod in charge of insects and told him there should not be a single mosquito to bother Sanatan Goswami. Here is an order. He's Mahadev. So Mahadev's order, who can, you know, disobey? So immediately, instantaneously, mosquitoes gayab. This kind of an advertisement which people make. You throw this repellent, mosquitoes gayab, cockroach gayab. No, like that, all the mosquitoes simply ran away. So thus we see this very beautiful, invisible chain of cooperation. Cooperation amongst the devotees, the demigods, all with the express purpose of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Samsiddhir Haritoshanam, that is the ultimate goal. So, both the demigods and the devotees of the Lord, they want to please the Supreme Lord, and this cooperation exists. Whether we know about it or we don't know about it, whether we are aware or whether we are not aware, it exists. It is there. So this is what I thought I would share with you. And finally, Srila Prabhupada himself, when he was asked by his disciples what would please him most, he said, I would be most pleased when there is cooperation amongst yourself. You keep Krishna in the center, you cooperate among yourself. That would be most pleasing to me. Hare Krishna. I would like to conclude and request His Holiness Kavichandra Maharaj to speak.